Music provided by Armstrong. Visit armstrongofficial.com to hear more badass music.
Welcome to the TriCast Gaming Podcast.
Greetings and welcome everyone to episode number 70 of the TriCast Gaming Podcast. Guys, it's been a long week, but we are here to do a show. We are here to speak to you all about video games. We are here to dissect the latest news. Joining me tonight to do that, Rogue Vox, Mike Martinez. How are you doing tonight, Mike?
I'm fantastic. You know, every time we do the countdown, I'm like hoping like one day you'll start at like 50. 49. 48.
I'll just keep you on your toes, and then like all of a sudden just jump down to 3, 2, 1.
Yep, exactly.
This guy doesn't even know how to say the name of our podcast. He can't say gaming, and you want him to count down from 50?
Yeah, that was a tough start to the show tonight. Thanks for pointing that out, Jason. My other co-host tonight, Neon's Jason Andrews. How are you?
Good, man. It's been like you just said, it's been a crazy week. I've had a brutal work week. You know how it goes. I did a ton of gaming this week. And I didn't even game 3 days this week. 3 days this week, I literally got home, did everything I could to like make it to kids' bedtime. And the moment they were in bed, I just literally just crawled into bed and passed out.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's been a lot. Like just today, like normally, I am straight up a 9 to 5:30 guy. I like just don't really function before 9 o'clock, really, from a work perspective. But this morning we had a 7:30 meeting because we have a partner that are on the East Coast, and they are like, yeah, we need to get this meeting in early. And so, yeah, we had a 7:30 meeting. So I'm like scraping myself in here, like dragging myself along on hands and knees, trying to get in here to start the day. And then, you know, at that point you're awake and you're just like, well, I guess I'm starting my day now. And then I kind of just went straight through until like almost 7:30, and I started writing the show, and then put the kids to bed, and I'm here. So, you know, it's been one of those days. That's why I don't get TriCast, the gaming podcast, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, man, I get you on that. Like, this is, you know, with my role being national, it's weird how I'm East Coast, and our corporate headquarters is West Coast. So they're 3 hours different from me. And so, yeah, we'll get up in the morning. I'll have stuff that's hot and heavy that needs to happen. And I have to like wait 3 hours for them to get going. And then I'll get home at 5:30. And then 3 or 4 hours later, I'm getting emails from the president of the company, or, you know, people are calling and you're just like, oh my God.
That's the worst, man. I know exactly what you're talking about. Thankfully, I've only kind of worked with a company on the West Coast once. We worked with this company that developed like slides for, you know, just like telescoping slides for boxes mounted so you can pull them in and out of a server rack, right?
Yeah.
And they were based in California, and that was rough. And I was glad when we were kind of like through all of that and we were good to go, because I was tired of trying to schedule those meetings. But
well, I guess I shouldn't complain too much. We not kidding you, we had a meeting this morning at like 10 o'clock Eastern. And so we're talking to these employees, and then at one point in time, someone on the call mentioned something about the time, and we realize, because we're a very large company, and we realize we're talking to associates that are in our Bangladesh, India office.
Oh, no.
And it was like midnight for them.
Oh, wow.
They like, we scheduled this call, and they like did all got together and like scheduled to be ready to have this conference call with us at like midnight their time local. It was like, oh dude, we're so sorry.
Wow. That's that's awesome. I can't top that. There's no way. The worst I get is how our East Coast partners always want to schedule meetings at 1 o'clock their time. And I'm like, dude, that's my lunch time. Yeah. That's when I eat lunch. So I end up just, so like you got all these central time people that are scheduling meetings right up to noon, because they're like, oh, everyone's lunchtime is noon. So they schedule, and then like they come in and they're like, oh, we see you're only free at 1 o'clock our time. So let's schedule that meeting.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. There was one time I literally went down to the cafeteria, bought two Kit Kats and a Coke, and that was all I ate for the day. Because it was just,
I don't eat. I'm not kidding you. I literally do
so
not
many
eat
meetings.
Lunch every day. Like I work straight through. I don't have time to eat.
It's tough.
And honestly, if I'm busy, which I am busy every day, like, you know, when you're that busy, like I don't even realize I'm hungry. If I slow down, I'll get hungry.
Yeah. No, I'm right there with you. Anyway, Mike, what about you? What's your week been like?
A lot easier than y'all's. My God.
Well, it's good. You can live it up for both of us.
Yeah. Been pretty easy. Well, I shouldn't say easy. It's just a little tedious. We're transferring a bunch of parts into like separate rooms, and we're giving them new locations and all that. On top of that, we're also doing inventory. So we have to like transfer all these parts. That way we can print off inventory sheets so we can count the shit. So we're in the process of moving all that. We just finished transferring everything. We're going to start counting next week, hopefully, for the year in inventory.
Man, that sounds monotonous, man.
No, that's what I'm good at.
Well, you know.
But yeah.
Somebody's got to do it, right? Hey, listen, though, I got a question for you, because I feel like we do the show, you know, I mean, we do the show weekly. You're not on it every week, but we do the show weekly, and we do the video. And I mean, every time I see you, your beard is always the same length.
Yeah.
So like, are you just like really on top of this shit, or is it just like it grows to bum fluff and then it's just done? That's just it.
I honestly don't. Right now it's too long. So like, whenever I can feel like the shit just rubbing on my face when I sleep, like it annoys me. So I like just go and get like my beard trims, just like just shave it, and then it's constantly. I always constantly have a 5 o'clock shadow, essentially.
That's, yeah, dude, I like, when I can start seeing the side of my beard out of the corner of my eye, that's when I know it's time to get it.
That, or when my mustache like goes inside my nose.
Like, yeah.
That's a mustache. Yeah. Like I gotta get rid of all this.
When I find too much leftovers in my mustache, that's another sign.
Both of you are talking about problems that I just, even if I wanted to, will never have to deal with. Like, I just not grow facial hair.
Nobody in your family has facial hair, do they?
No. Like,
nobody.
We have, I mean this in literally the most PC way possible, but we have too much Native American, like, in our bloodline. Like, I'm one generation, like, my mom has, like, her card, right? So, like, I'm one generation removed where I no longer qualify for, like, government assistance. So, or like that close, but
wow.
Like, we have no hair on my body, dude. Like, I just don't grow hair. Well, I say that like every time I've ever gotten my hair cut, like, it doesn't matter. Like, I've lived in Texas now, I've lived in New Mexico, I've lived I'm now in Atlanta. Everywhere I go to get my hair cut, the stylist always make a comment about how thick my freaking hair is. So I have massively crazy dense thick hair on top of my head, and I can't grow hair anywhere else on me, dude.
That's awesome. Yeah, I noticed, like, it doesn't even look like you have to shave. It's just always clean.
I mean, I get a 5 o'clock shadow after about a week and a half.
Have you tried growing anything out at all? Like,
yes.
It just skipped out long.
I straight up bought like beard oils and was taking vitamins and like, because I've got this baby face. So I think like, okay, if I could just grow some facial hair, it'll like help.
Yeah.
And I think I like struggled through like a 4.5 month like summer. Like, straight up 4.5 months, no shave, doing all of the beard oils, vitamins, all the stuff I could do. And it was like your link, Mike, right now. And it's patchy as shit. It looked, I looked like a hobo. It was terrible. It's terrible. And when it's so that link,
wait a minute. What I just heard was Mike looks like a hobo. That's what I just heard.
Shit. I said, I look like a hobo because mine's patchy. Like, it's that length, but like super patchy. There's all these holes in it, and it doesn't like fill in and touch. And the other thing is, and I don't know if Laurel gets on to you about this or not, but when it's at like what looks to be about your length, it's not soft, it's spiky, right?
Yeah.
And so my wife hates it because then I'm just the prickly pear the whole time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and I can't burn. I can't get past that length. Like I just can't. Like it just, I'm done.
Yeah. No, mine stays pretty soft. It's like whenever I first shave, like when I first shave it, it does, it's kind of hard and bristly, but like after a day, it's soft again.
Yeah. My only like real problem is that one side of my face grows faster and thicker than the other side. That's the only real problem I have.
That's hilarious.
So I have to like kind of keep up with it until it kind of evens out a little bit.
Have you tried have you ever wanted to like grow it long, Phil, like down to like your chest?
I thought about it. I don't know how to like do that because it I think it would take a lot of work because the side gets really annoying. Yeah. I'd want it to kind of really come down taper. Towards a point. Yeah.
Yeah.
But well, I don't really know how to do it.
You probably get this all the time because, again, of the... I mean, you're not a redhead, but you have like a, your you know, beard a red beard complexion. Yeah. So do you have like some like Irish bloodline, do you think? Or?
Well, so I've done the you know, spit in a tube DNA test.
Yeah.
And I don't have near as much Irish as you'd think.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you have?
I'm predominantly English and Scottish. It's like 50-something percent English and Scottish.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm mostly Dutch and then Native American.
That's one thing I hate the most.
The Dutch. The bloody Dutch.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm a lot English and Scottish, and then a little bit. I think if you add up all of the British Isles, it's like 75% of my 75 to, and then like there's a bunch of French, like Northern French and German, and then the last of it's just like Norway, Sweden, that area, you know, the Viking area.
And then that 1% or less than 1% East African.
No, I don't even have anything like that exciting. No.
I thought everybody had that. I thought everyone had that.
Yeah, no. Connor, for a while, had like a little bit of like native Jewish blood, but then that went away after like one of its updates. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that was just an error.
Oops.
Yeah.
That's funny.
No. All right. Well, that was fun, though. I hope everyone enjoyed it. But should we talk about some video games?
Why not?
Sure.
All right. Because you know what? Each and every week, we do get together to channel our virtues through the Triforce to provide you, the listener, all the hottest topics from the mythical world of video games. We also add in as much of our colorful thoughts and fill up monologues as we can handle in a week simply because we love video games and talking about them. If you like what you hear, please consider leaving us a like and a review on your podcasting app of choice. And if you really enjoy it, share on social media or directly with your friends, because this show continues to grow thanks to all of your wonderful support. You can find us on Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram at TriCastGamingP1 and on our website, TriCastGamingPodcast.com. DM us on any platforms with your questions, comments, concerns, or corrections, and we'd be happy to read them out. Speaking of corrections, Jason, I believe you have a correction for yourself once again.
Yep. So last week, while we were talking about Arcane and the, you know, the basically the nostalgia takes you back to getting into games, I brought up The Witcher. And I specifically, while listening back to the show, heard myself say that it was based on a video game. Whereas, you know, technically it is based on the series of 6 fantasy novels and 15 short stories written by Polish author Andrzej Sapkowski. And although I knew this at the time, I did not say anything about the previous credits. I just, what I actually physically said on the show was that it was based on a video game, even though, you know, obviously they all tie in together. So there we go.
Yeah.
Correction.
Yeah. So I actually remember when you said this, and I remember thinking, I remember thinking that, but then I thought, well, maybe the show is more based on the game than the books, and maybe that's what you're referring to. And then I kind of didn't think about it anymore after the show ended, but I think you're right. I think they really did take a blend of the two.
Yeah.
But when they made the show.
Well, Geralt, they would not have made the show if they didn't turn it into a video game, I don't think.
Well,
Well, for instance, Henry Cavill, it was like a huge component of the game, and he loved the game, and he did things specifically in the show because he played the game and liked the way that Geralt was in the game. Like, for the hot tub scene, that's from the game, not from the show.
Right. Yeah. You know,
all that
sure.
kind of stuff. Right. So, and it's funny, that's like, actually... I thought, like, I remembered, you know, when we went back and I was listening to the show, that started coming up. And I was sitting there going, like, well, yeah, but I here in a second, I say that it came from the book. And in my brain, I did it. But when I physically listened to the show, it never happened. And I was just like, dang.
Yeah. Well, before we get another correction on this, it's Geralt, not Geralt.
I thought it was Geralt.
No, it's Geralt.
Okay. Well, I literally am misspelling it or mispronouncing it.
Geralt of Rivia.
Yeah. I thought it was Geralt.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, so like interesting tidbit on this, right? So the guy, Sapkowski, who wrote the books, he sold the rights to CD Projekt Red.
Oh, we were just talking about this.
Like a long time ago. For something like $20,000. It was like paltry. Because at the time, everyone was like, yeah, like, what, you just like copy old video games and like resell them? Yeah, sure, okay, yeah. If you think you can make a game out of this, go for it, right?
I'll take my 20 grand.
Yeah, I'll take my 20 grand sucker. Right now. And then, of course, obviously, The Witcher exploded in popularity. And this dude was like getting nothing. Because it was like a one-time licensing fee. And so he was getting nothing for like the millions and millions and millions that CD Projekt were making.
Yikes.
But what's interesting is if he had lived in the United States and done this in the United States, he'd have been fucked, right? Like US laws don't allow for renegotiation of that. Mm-hmm. Like once you sell it, you sell it. Well, in Poland, you have the right to take something like that back to court should the, you know, basically like this situation where the property exploded. And obviously the compensation for the rights to the story is not adequate to the amount of money that the product was making anymore. And he actually won in court in Poland. Nice. And he's now getting his payday from CD Projekt Red. Yeah, definitely good for him because, yeah, it is his story.
Yeah, it's clearly his property.
Have y'all read The Witcher series?
I have started listening to one of the books on audio on... what's it? You know, Amazon audiobooks, whatever that thing's called.
Yeah, Audible.
Audible, thank you. I've never
short
finished.
Stories on Audible. That's it. I've not done any of the actual novels.
Yeah. So, like, I was reading some of the reviews, and somebody described it as reading a book, like, essentially, like, the book never, like, goes into his fights. It's always a guy in the book telling the story of Geralt's fights. So, like, you never actually read about him fighting. It's just stories being told about it. So there's not really anything exciting about it, really.
Sounds like Lord of the Rings, then.
Yeah, a lot of description.
It's like, I love how I always, anyone asks me, like, what's the Lord of the Rings books like? And I'm like, well, have you seen the movies? Yeah. You know how, like, the whole Battle of Helm's Deep? Yeah. Well, that's 1.5 pages. That's it. 1.5 pages of the book is what describes the Battle of Helm's Deep.
Which I love the books, Lord of the Rings, by the way.
Yeah.
And then there's like 20 pages describing what this Ent tree looks like. When Frodo first discovers him in the forest.
Funny enough, I don't know why, but yesterday, for some reason, it happened like in the height of COVID, and I just never saw it, caught it, whatever. But the cast of Lord of the Rings did like a reading on like Zoom and had all of the cameras on, and they were doing a, you know, a big, you know, reading, and it made the rounds on the internet. And the actor who does Gimli has a reading, and he reaches over on the, you'll have to look it up, you can find it on YouTube. He reaches over onto his desk and puts the little helmet on where it looks, you know, it's like his movie helmet.
Yeah.
And then he tilts the camera up to where it's like right at his nose and he's talking and it's, you know, it's exactly his voice. And now it's like, he doesn't have to worry about like the fact that he doesn't have the movie prop beard on. Right. Yeah. And it looks just like him. And he's doing the scene where they're at Helm's Deep and he's trying to look over the wall and he's like, what's happening out there? That's awesome. And he's like trying to like, and, like great. On camera, you can see his head like bouncing, like he's trying to lean over the top of the wall. What, I can't see what's happening out there. And then, of course, Orlando Bloom like burst in immediately, like on cue, and says, "Would you like for me to get you a?" I can't remember what he says exactly. Would you like for me to get you a step or some books or something? You know? Oh, dude, it was freaking good.
Glorious.
So look that up. It's freaking funny.
All right. Well, now that we've kind of said we were going to talk about video games and diverged again into what is essentially more Shoot the Breeze, let's get into Cameron Kemp wrote in again to ask us another question. This time, this question is, has a game's storyline ever made you cry? And if so, what was that game? I'll kick this off. Cameron, I'm not ashamed to admit there's been several games that have made me cry for sure.
Super Mario Brothers 2. Calling it now.
Yeah, you know, every time Princess Peach gets snagged, man, I'm like, no! But no, in seriousness, there's been several games that have definitely made me tear up. Very recently, Psychonauts 2 is pretty touching towards the end of it.
I had a feeling that one was going to be one for you.
Yeah, Last of Us Part 2 was one that definitely caught me towards the end. But one that really sticks out in my mind is Celeste. The ending of Celeste, which I had listed as one of my games of the generation when we did that show last year. The ending of that game is very, very touching. And I definitely teared up at the end of that. So yeah, actually, I actually find myself caught in emotion in terms of sad emotion by games much, much more often than, say, humorous emotion in games or, you know, even sad emotions in movies and TV shows. Games seem to have, I think it's because there's a much deeper connection by the time you get to that moment with that character because you've been with that character the whole game.
Right.
And so it's just, it feels much deeper to me. Now, sometimes with shows can be long running. I can feel that. But like movies, for sure, like it's usually very hard for me to get too emotionally attached to a movie. But yeah, games, there's definitely been games that have made me cry. Yeah, if I think of any more, I'll let you know. But I mean, I'm not usually like bawling my eyes out, right? But yeah, I mean, definitely.
Tearing up.
I definitely had a single or two tears roll down my cheek from the ending of a game.
Yeah. Mine are probably like the ones that I can think of right now. Final Fantasy VII got me multiple points in that. Old school Final Fantasy VII, not talking the remake here.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely got me. But I would say recent games that got me. It's one of my favorite all-time games, Red Dead Redemption 2. But I would say Red Dead 1 got me just as hard as Red Dead 2 did. Maybe Red Dead 2 is, you know, I don't know. Like, both of them got me in the story. Like, the ending hit really hard on both of them to me. I mean, I love Red Dead Redemption 2 again. I'd say it's top three games all the time for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
and those stories were great.
Right on. For me, it was Life is Strange, the very first one.
Yeah.
And I didn't play it, but watching someone play Detroit Become Human.
Okay, sure.
That one's... Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely some tough scenes in Detroit Become Human, like when the little girl is getting abused by the father. That was very difficult. But I actually couldn't play. I chose not to play the game anymore because of that scene. I just couldn't. I think emotionally.
Yeah, it's for me, rough. Like, man, it was, God, it's rough.
It was too much for me, I think.
Especially if you have a daughter, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like the start of The Last of Us Part 1.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the daughter is killed, like, fuck, man, that's tough.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Actually, I just pulled up my games played this year because I was like, I know there was another game that got me. And it's Kena Bridge of Spirits, which I just finished. Because in the end, you realize that everything that your character, Kena, is doing throughout the game.
Mm-hmm.
Is because she lost her father and she's trying to prove that she can do the job or do the task, be a spirit guide that her father left to her to do, even though she couldn't help her father in his time of passing on. And so, yeah, it was really that was really tough too, that scene. Because they do it again, they do it as, you know, this little girl who's seeing her father pass away and trying to help him and can't. And yeah, it's that's very tough to watch.
Yeah,
for sure.
One more, actually. It wasn't because I was sad, but it was BioShock Infinite at the very end when she's given her monologue about saying there's always one man and one city. It was just, I was so invested in the whole like lore of like just the BioShock games itself. Like I was just, I don't know, it was just overwhelming, like just the kind of stories they built. That's pretty much why I cried, not because I was sad. It was just because like, my God, I love this game.
Yeah, no, I feel you there. Like I had similar kind of a feeling with Halo, like when
it's a good take,
when Cortana and Cortana is at the end of Halo what was it, 5, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a different kind of cry though. You know what I mean? Like that's not necessarily, like you said, that's not because it made you sad. It's just like you're overwhelmed by the emotion of like mm-hmm. how good it's like breathtaking.
Yeah. Essentially. Yep.
I actually, now it's going to sound like I just cried every game, but again, kind of breezing through my list, I remember this one, Miles Morales, the ending of Miles Morales, which this game is right at its 12-month mark, but there is a key character that dies at the end of Miles Morales, but in the form of a sacrifice that is incredibly touching. Mm-hmm. And I actually, because you have to play through Miles Morales twice to get the platinum. Yeah. And even knowing what was coming at the end of the second time, it totally caught me again. I kind of like definitely choked up again watching mm-hmm. that end scene. So
right.
So now it just sounds like I cried every fucking game. So there you go. There you have it, Cameron. I am just a big baby, it seems. All right. Let's get into what we are playing. I think I'm going to kick it off this week. I'm playing more Breakpoint. I don't really have a whole lot more to say about this game other than like every time I play it, something new like really catches me and makes me laugh. But the dialogue in this game, like holy shit, some of the dialogue is so bad. But it's exemplified by the fact that sometimes you have to go and interrogate people to get information and they just straight up like they do not voice the giving the information. So like your character runs up and grabs them and it's like, show me everything you know about such and such person. And then like instead of them telling you anything, they just go, that's all I know, man, I swear. And then you just hit them in the back of the head.
That's funny.
And then it pops up like, you now know where Madeira's house is at. And it's like, what the fuck? Like
Wildlands does that too, I think.
I don't know. It's really funny. I think the dialogue in this game is just so bad. But my brother finally caught up, and my brother and my dad and I have started playing together, and it is a lot of fun. It is a lot of fun to play together as like a tactical shooter, you know, going into a situation and planning out, you know, reconning the area, finding the enemies, planning out where you're going to go, and you know, kind of coordinating. It's been a lot of fun. So I mean, the gameplay is good. I mean, I definitely think it's, you know, above average gameplay, but almost everything else about the game is like average to below average, to be honest. So that's where I'm at on that. Also playing a lot of Forza Horizon 5. Not quite finished it yet. I'm actually getting really close to finishing it now. I put so much like basically just stopped playing the new Far Cry and I've just played tens of hours of Forza Horizon. I probably put like, I don't know, I've probably broken 20 to 25 hours in this game already since it came out. I just couldn't stop playing it. It's so good. It is a brilliant arcade racer. You know, I think I said it before, if you're a fan of the Need for Speed games, like an old school fan of the Need for Speed games, Forza Horizon is so much better. It's what you want now. It's what you need. You don't get the corny story, but like the racing and the cars to buy and the world to explore and everything is just, it's so much, so much better. And this game is, we're going to talk about it again a little bit later in the show, but I mean, it is the highest rated Metacritic game of the year. And it's also sold really well. I mean, there was something like, I think they broke like 5 million users within the first week of the game being out. They had 1 million users before it even officially launched. So this game has done really, really well, and it's been completely snubbed on the Game of the Year discussions, and we'll get into that in a little bit in the show, and I'm pretty disappointed by that. But Forza Horizon 5 is really good. I should have a rating for you probably next, well, not next week, because next week is Thanksgiving, and we're doing the special episode. So the week after Thanksgiving, I will give you a game review score. Spoiler alert, I think it could well get close to the first five that I will have given on this show. I like it that much. I think it's that good of a racing game. And then finally, I've jumped into this Halo Infinite multiplayer. So, you know, Xbox Surprise released it on the 15th of November to coincide with their 20th anniversary show. And so I downloaded it the other night, and I played it a bunch the first night it came out, and I played it a bunch more last night. I had a blast with it the first night. Last night was really rough. It went back to being what I kind of expected a Halo multiplayer experience to be like for me, where I just die a lot and am never positive. I am just not as good at first-person shooters anymore. But that said, like, the sound design, the gameplay, the fluidity of movement, the weapons, it's really good. The map design, the small maps are really, really fun. Even the big maps, as I've kind of, the bigger maps, as I've kind of started playing them, I found like different corridors and things like that to explore with them. There's a lot of nuance to the game in that regard. A lot of cool art and imagery in these levels. It's just really good. Really, really good. I am kind of shocked. I didn't really think 343 had it in them. I didn't think that they would get something like this right. But I think they are, and it has exploded on, even on Steam. They had something like over 270,000 concurrent users the other day on Steam. Now, my take on this is that, you know, it's free to play, so that helps tremendously. Mm-hmm. And number two, it's good. I mean, people are saying it's good. So, like, if you got something that's free to play and people are talking about it positively in social media and among their friends, you're going to attract more people to come and try it out. And I think that's awesome for Halo. And I think it's awesome for 343 as a studio, because they really needed this. If this thing didn't hit, they were going to be in trouble with the way Master Chief Collection and Halo 4 and Halo 5 had gone for them. They really need a success here. And I think they might have it. Now, I do want to touch on the Battle Pass. It is fucking garbage. I mean, absolute hot garbage. This thing sucks so bad. It's so hard to progress through the Battle Pass. They give you these weekly challenges. And like right now for me, because they, once you complete one, they add in another one. And right now I have two different ones. That's get 5 kills with the commando rifle, and one is get 15 kills with the commando rifle. Those are my two weekly objectives right now. And I'm like, one, how the hell are these crossing like this? And two, the commando rifle is a gun that you have to pick up. You don't get to start with it. And so there's obviously some people that are chasing to get it because they want the kills too. But also, like, I'll finally get it and then just die right away because I can't get kills with it. So it's just like, okay, well, I guess I'm stuck, not able to even progress my battle pass at all because these are my objectives and I can't complete them. So, yeah, it's really rough. But they have already come out and said that they are going to address some of these concerns, yeah, and that they have a patch hitting for the start of next week. So that's really exciting. Like, again, if you got a good game, if you're free to play and you have an engaged developer that's willing to listen to feedback and talk to the fans and make changes, that really does bode well for the future of this game. I mean, obviously, we're only a few days in, but I really hope that this continues to progress well for them, because they really do need that win. 343 as a studio, they really, really do need that win. And I'm excited to see what the campaign looks like on December 8th. We shall see. But that's it for me on what I'm playing this week.
What about you, Jason? Okay. I'm next.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, Mike, because you have Halo written down here too, so I thought, well, maybe that's a good segue into...
Yeah, I downloaded it last night, and I played a couple of games, and then I saw there were weapon challenges. I'm like, oh, I'm going to do this instead. So I finished all of the assault rifle ones, and I'm working on the other, the one below it. But as far as the multiplayer, I really like it. a lot. That's all I have to say about that. No, I'm kidding. No, it feels good. I'm just not used to having to pick up the guns because I've never really hardcore gotten into like a Halo game. So having to go around and find your weapons, that's a new thing for me, which I kind of like. It can, looks like it can get annoying a little bit, but the assault rifle, in my opinion, is still a decent weapon if you can't find anything that you want. The first game I played was Control, like a Control type game. I did pretty well. I actually got a 2.0 KD on that first nice. Game. And then I played a TDM next match, and I couldn't get above a 0.5.
Yeah.
So there was that. But I mean, it's a really fun game. I like the way it feels and the way it looks good.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate that, though. The whole, like, good at objectives and not really good at just straight up TDM, for sure. I'm the same way. But, I like the fact that it's much more like the arena shooter. You know, it's, it's you have a set, everybody has a set starting loadout, and you can go find the weapons that spawn, but that's kind of it. Yeah. There's none of this, like, chasing the god role in Destiny or, you know, what's. If I level up my character to level 50 and I've unlocked the badass DMR, so now I can just kill people faster that are not level 50. You know, there's none of that. It's just always going to be, you start with
very super balanced.
Yep. So that is what I like about it as well. Mm. Yep.
And I also played Rocket League because I wanted to get my champion reward and was let down by the wheels.
They do suck, don't they?
They're pretty bad.
So bad.
They're pretty bad.
I hate them. I'm so disappointed. I finally made champ rewards and they're just ass. It's so bad.
It is pretty bad. All right, Jason, what are you playing?
So because of Arcane, that damn it, I played a lot of freaking League of Legends this week. It's the same shit. The show's good. It doesn't have anything to do with that damn game. I have so many hours in League of Legends. Obviously, I do like the game, but it's nothing has changed. It's the same shit. So, you know, the only thing that makes it fun is that I'm playing with a group of friends. It's something to do together. I don't know. There's a little bit of nostalgia in it because you're playing with some of the characters that are in the show.
Right.
It doesn't have anything to do with the show. So I don't know. I probably won't play it a ton. I just kind of got back into it just a little bit. Mike, you had said that you had downloaded the game and you were going to try it. Good luck, sir. It's hard as F. For those that want to know, I'll just throw out a shout out. If you really like the show and you want some nostalgia, I don't know if you're into these kind of games, but they have a card game that's like a Hearthstone knockoff. It's called Legends of Runeterra. That is by far the better way to actually get some of the lore out of a game, because the base League of Legends game has absolutely nothing to do with the lore. Like, nothing. The characters are in it. That's it.
That's pretty much it.
So
can you play, I'm looking this up now as we talk, but can you play it on mobile? Yeah.
Yep. So it's just a card game. The only thing with the lore is that each of the champions are from all the cities that are in the lore, and you build decks based off of like where regions they're from. And cities. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And champions have specific interactions with other champions or cards with other cards dependent on their lore crossovers. They have dialogue within the game on things. And so it's definitely way more lore based. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I'm saying I've played a ton of that game too. It's, you know, for a card game, it's fun. I actually don't like Hearthstone. But Runeterra, I can, you know, it's okay. I'm not super into those card games, so I haven't played it a lot. But you know, I've definitely dumped some time into it. It's okay.
Yeah, I'm just looking here. It says like 1 week ago, Path of Champions, our new permanent PvE mode, is finally here. Excellent. That's exactly what I'm looking for. Look, I'm gonna go ahead and hit download right now.
It's probably gonna be like a draw, like where you actually have to pick between few cards and then go with that instead of like you actually draft your
instead of building decks. I don't really know. Ginger plays a lot of my buddy Ginger plays a lot of Legends of Runeterra, so he probably knows a lot more about it. I played a lot at launch, and I haven't really played since launch. So,
right.
I'll give it a try for sure. I'll see.
So the other game I did finally, I've been saying I wanted to get into Grounded and play with the update. I did get some Grounded in. It's fun. It's everything I was really hoping it would be. You know, they so they added a shit ton of gear. They kind of went back and some of the items that existed in the game before, they have now added into other recipes and made it where you now have to like analyze, you know, go back and analyze some stuff that's in your bags to be able to use them and make some things. And they have added in some like new creatures, some like expanded on some parts of the map a bit. And there's just new things to build. You know, I don't know. It's just, again, it's just continuing the, you know, it's not a full game. Little by little, they're releasing some. And so it definitely added enough that I'm back in it. There's things I haven't explored, things I haven't found, things that there is a boss, which I've not got to fight and kill yet. The Brood Mother. She's a big spider boss. Apparently, she's hard as shit.
Of course.
And so we haven't got to that point yet. We're not geared to even be able to do it.
Right.
There's a whole strategy and stuff. So
Have they unlocked some of those? Not unlocked, but like actually, because I remember we were exploring the map a long time ago, and you can see where they kind of like roped off a section. We could actually run through.
Yeah, yeah.
Have they
go into a bunch of it now? Yeah, there's a whole. Have you played since the they put stuff into the pond?
No.
Oh yeah, there's like
since release.
There's a whole like there's a big pond and there's like a ton of stuff down in the water. Obviously, there's like fish and spiders and tadpoles and you know there's a whole ecosystem down there. But do you remember like the very beginning of the game where you like find some of the equipment that got you shrunk?
Yeah.
Basically. Okay.
Yeah.
So that stuff like continues on in all sorts of other zones. Like there's stuff underwater in that. There's stuff in the like gas area. There's stuff in the bushes area that was all coned off early on. Like it's expanded a ton. There's a lot of like quote unquote story starting to happen now of like how you got shrunk and how you're going to get unshrunk or whatever.
Right.
But so yeah, they've changed a ton since the entry. It's been fun. Again, it's hard to like rate the game because it's not a completed game.
Right.
And so every time they come out with an update, you know, I like hammer out the update and then it's just there's nothing left to do. So it's like, okay, bye. Wait for another update. I guess that's just kind of the, you know, when you're playing a beta, that's just kind of how it goes.
Right.
That's the craziest part to me though, because that game first came out in like June of 2020, right? So that thing is almost 18 months old.
Yeah.
Since it came out in game preview.
Yeah, but I mean, but you know what? You're not real used to, I mean, as a mainly a console gamer, the whole idea of like a beta or an alpha is like a little bit new to you. Like in a PC world, like shit. Like I've played games that have stayed beta or alpha for 5 years. and like they make a lot of advancements, but.
Yeah, it's like it just never finishes.
It just never finishes, right? So as a PC gamer, especially like through Steam, oh dude, like every other damn game is freaking beta.
It's just weird to me because like I understand that concept when you're a smaller developer and you need to start getting game sales to kind of keep yourselves paid and in business to keep going.
Yeah. Right.
But Grounded is from Obsidian Entertainment.
Yeah.
Owned by Microsoft.
Yeah, but you know what? They've been again. I'll say this: they have been really active with updates, like really active. They have actually done a lot, and they're constantly updating things and posting things on their, you know, their Twitter page and doing some stuff. So, like, I've been impressed with it. Like, they've made a lot more ground than what I'm used to from beta games as a PC gamer.
Like DayZ.
Like DayZ.
Yeah, I'm interested actually, because I know that. Yeah, okay. I thought this was true. So this says on the internet that, I mean, again, Google,
the interwebs.
Yeah, but this is from GameIndustry.biz that says that only about 14 people at Obsidian are working on Grounded.
It sounds like it's a really small group of people from all of the like posts and stuff. They seem like a really small team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's really interesting though, that I don't know. How do you go and convince your boss that's like, hey, can us like 10 people just go off and like build on this game for like ever? And they're okay, all right, sure. Why not?
Well, and they're not, I mean, unless it's for, I guess it is for sale on Steam because it's on Game Pass, but it's mm-hmm. also on Steam. And that would be the only place they're really, it's $30 on Steam. That'd be the only place to really bring in an income. Yeah. Because it's not like, I mean, with Xbox owning them, it's not like Xbox is paying them to have it on Game Pass. Like,
right.
Yeah.
So their only real income, unless it's via a quote unquote stipend for being on Game Pass, it's their only income is through Steam.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that Microsoft bankrolls a lot of like overhead costs and things like that for Obsidian now.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Right. Yeah, they're getting like a stipend, if you will, or whatever.
Right, right. All right, well, are we ready to move on into the news or topics of the show?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
All right, well, so again, I don't really have like a main topic this week, although I think the first three topics in the news run are pretty important, and we might stick on them for a little bit. But let's go ahead and kick it off. Holy shit, it's officially apocalyptic at Activision Blizzard now. It just keeps getting worse there. A massive Wall Street Journal bombshell report came out, basically alleging that Bobby Kotick knew about a lot of the misconduct and sexual allegations, and even made threats against... you know, employees in the past, insinuating they should.
The way I understand it, maybe I'm wrong on this, but he himself was accused of mistreatment by a female. And what you're about to say is the voicemail that he left her, right?
Right. Yep.
Yeah. That's not him threatening someone else. He's threatening someone who made accusations against him personally.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's what I think is weird. I didn't quite understand. It says that this apparently happened in 2006 and he left some voicemail for somebody. So this says that he had been accused of mistreating several female employees, including leaving a voicemail in 2006 in which he threatened to have an assistant killed. Now, what I couldn't gather was that, like, did she make a claim against him? And so he called her and was like, I'll have you killed if you keep up with this.
That's the way it sounds to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't tell. Or if it was one of those, like, she kind of fucked up on her job that day and he was going over the top in reprimanding her. Well, that's what I couldn't tell.
Which this happening in 2006... the other parts of this story that I read, if I understand this correctly, is they went to court over this and she got paid a settlement out of court. Like she got a settlement on this. So I don't know if this is one of those deals where it's coming out now because, you know, the statutes have I don't understand like how it's coming out. If there was anything signed that was a non-disclosure agreement or like, I don't know any of that, but. So that's the whole deal. Is this apparently was, not necessarily, I guess, super secret. Obviously, it was, but they went to court over this, and she got paid.
See, that's the other thing that I still can't even exactly figure out because the Wall Street Journal kind of throws a lot of stuff. It's like a scattershot of stuff.
That's why it's like we're all sitting here going, I think, and the way I understand it.
I think that the court case was not against Kotick. It was another incident where someone alleged that their boss had raped them at work. I think that was where the settlement outside of court happened. Not in this one directly related to Kotick, but Kotick did know about that incident and didn't tell the board of directors about that incident when all of this started coming up. He didn't bring that up. Yeah, I don't know. It's a lot, you know. And the other thing that's really important about this Wall Street Journal article is that they sort of tried to insinuate that it was all sort of Blizzard, that this was that it was the problem was with Blizzard. That's where the culture was at.
We have even been saying that. Like I have said on this show multiple times, no, all the problems are with Blizzard. They're not with Activision. Yeah.
Well, apparently that's not true at all either. Correct. A lot of these are talking about issues at Sledgehammer Games, including this rape incident. Was a Sledgehammer Games employee. Also Treyarch, which is another one of the Call of Duty developers. Well, both of those studios fall under the Activision side of the umbrella. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's very clear that this has spread across a lot of issues. And if you read through the article, so much of it is pressure to drink in the office, pressure to drink in the office, pressure to drink. I'm like, what the fuck, people? Don't drink in the office. I mean, holy shit, it's not the 70s anymore. Like, what are we doing? Excessive alcohol use gets people in trouble all the time.
Yep.
Just stay away from it, man. Just stay away, and certainly do not bring that into the office. I love how like so they're like addressing it, and they're like, yeah, one of the things we're starting now today is no more alcohol in the office. It's like, wait, you didn't do that like immediately when all this started?
That should be like a given. Like, just don't take alcohol to work.
Yeah, it's absurd, man. Absurd. And I mean, it kind of keeps rolling, right? So this Treyarch co-studio head, Dan Bunting, has now left the company. He resigned from the company. He was the one that supposedly was investigated for sexually harassing a female employee in 2017. Apparently, you know, that was all kind of done and dusted, and he did some kind of, you know, counseling and whatnot, but now that's all been brought back to light again. And so he's just like, nope, I'm out of here. I guess I'm resigning before any of this gets any further. But yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised that he's gone. I mean,
I mean,
you're not going to have the trust of your employees anymore at this point.
Nope.
So, I mean, apparently
more than that, I mean, I'm not saying obviously you want trust from your employees, but I think more than that, they've had a ton of pressure from outside sources, Sony and Microsoft. And I mean, people who they rely on for income are now, you know, giving a whole lot of pressure that they won't continue to do any business with them, you know, unless there's changes made.
I think they need to like wipe this, like get rid of all the managers. Like that's like, I don't know. I would not do business with them at all.
Well, I mean, but look, we've been talking about this. Like we've already been talking about on the Blizzard side, how they're just not really Blizzard anymore. Like,
yeah.
So at what point is Activision really Activision? And at what point is Activision really worth being Activision? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying that people aren't important and like, a lot of times the people at the very bottom of the company are the face of the company and who really does the actual work, not the people at the top who are getting all the big bucks. Like that's a lot of the fundamentals of a lot of these companies in America on like who really is doing the work. But like it makes you wonder, is this one of those companies that the bottom end is, you know, that's carrying the team, or has the top end been, you know, the decision makers and who's been carrying this? Like, I don't know. Like it just makes question, like what is the future of Activision Blizzard, you know, good or bad? Like, I mean, obviously you think it's all bad.
Right.
I mean, I think, you know, so you talk about like an industry that you and I work in, Jason, where you really can have the lower members, the people really doing a lot of the grunt work can really be what drives the company forward. But I think at creative companies like, you know, a movie studio or a video game company, right? I think the people that have the most creative ideas and the most vision are the ones that really drive an identity of a studio. And if those 5 to 10 people are the assholes that were doing bad shit in the office and are gone now, you really could be in a situation where you have got to find where that talent is in your company right now. And that may take some time. I'm not saying it isn't there. I'm just saying it may take time for people to figure out who they are and allow them to cultivate their ideas and for them to come to fruition. It may be some time before we see Activision Blizzard back towards anything resembling their best form. Right. From the past.
Mean, I'm trying to like grab some kind of form of example here, but let's go with someone who is a major leader and it was just a one single person, right? So it's not like a mass leave like this. I mean, but let's go Apple. When Steve Jobs was gone, there's a lot of people who would say like they were never the same. You know, they're still a good company, but they are not on the same trajectory that they were under Jobs, right? Like, but they also had a lot of people like Ivy. Like, I mean, Ivy was there and was like kind of like Steve Jobs' right-hand man, and he's been around and he's continued to carry a lot of stuff. So that like there was other people, but just that one guy removed completely changed some of their trajectory. Obviously, Apple is not failing, right? But what would they be now if they still had Jobs this whole time, right? Like, so I don't know, like, you know, does this change their trajectory where they're just not as going to be as good as what they would be in, you know, 20 years if they had those before, or do they completely collapse, right? Like,
yeah, it's definitely a good question. I mean, certainly you could say that looking at 343, a studio that we just talked about, you know, they'd kind of lost their way a little bit and Joseph Staten came back to the studio and really helped guide Halo Infinite this time. And you have to wonder if where Halo Infinite is as a game right now is due to the vision of Staten coming back and helping the studio there.
Yeah.
Another example is Kojima and Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah.
You know, like there is no Metal Gear Solid without Kojima.
Right.
You know,
I would say
Konami tried.
Another non-gaming one is if you take Kevin Feige away from MCU.
Oh my God, dude.
What is MCU?
Yeah.
See that? What, oh no!
Right, you know what I mean?
Don't like, speak that into existence.
I'm just saying, like, clearly he is.
Yeah,
you know the puppet master on that, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Well, it's like Dave Filoni with Star Wars.
Now. Yeah, right. Yeah. No, I completely agree with that too. I think Dave Filoni is the big dog on that too. I completely agree with you.
For sure. Another part of this article, though, that really I think is probably the most galling and ridiculous piece of all of this. So we talked about Jen O'Neill leaving, I think, just on last week's show. And we kind of wondered, like, there's more going on here, right? Like, clearly shit's not getting better at Activision Blizzard and she's peacing out, right? Now, she gave a really PC answer with our statement. They were going to donate $1 million, all that kind of stuff. Well, it came out that she came in at the same time that Mike Ybarra came in. So she was promoted from head of I'm drawing a blank on the studio now. The name of the studio, the one that did the Crash Bandicoot game and the Crash Team Racing remaster, Vicarious Visions. Oh my gosh, I can't believe it took me so long to think of that. She was head of Vicarious Visions, and she was promoted up to be co-head of Activision Blizzard alongside Mike Ybarra, who came over from Xbox. And apparently, when these two came into their role, they were given compensation packages equal to their existing compensation packages from their previous job roles. And those were not equal. So basically they were paying Mike Ybarra a whole lot more to do literally a co-head job with Jen O'Neill. And supposedly both Jen and Mike Ybarra went to the leaders and said, hey, you need to fix this. Like, you know, you need
this
to put us on
the time to do this shit.
Yeah, this is a really bad idea. Like, fix this, you know, put us on equal pay. And they apparently refused to do it.
Oh.
And she was basically like, yeah, well, this is, you know, you guys clearly are not really committed to making a difference and making a change.
So the other part about this story that was crazy to me is that she also revealed that she personally has also been a victim of sexual harassment while at Activision herself.
Like, oh my God.
she has personally also had it happen to her. She's like, I'm just done with this shit. Which,
yeah.
The only thing here is, you know, I think we also ended that with, oh, they, something didn't work out. We were thinking, you know, it was the 90 day and they moved on. I think it was the 90 day and she moved on.
Yeah.
I think she decided like, okay,
yeah.
You know, ultimately we were a little wrong on that, clearly wrong on that, not a little wrong. Mm-hmm. But they probably went in together at the 90 day. She asked for her, you know, pay, to be, raised, and they passed and she was like, all right, well then I'm out. And then they countered and she's like, well, it's too late now. You clear, you've already shown your cards that you don't respect me.
Right.
You know, I've already been mistreated by y'all and it's not getting any better.
I'm surprised and she's still stayed.
I'm out.
God.
Yeah. It's just a stunning situation because, you know, you hear about pay inequality and, you know, I think that it is not as exaggerated as you hear about it, but then you get situations like this that is just so high profile and so gallingly obvious. Like you literally have these two people doing the same job and you're not going to pay them the same.
And in the middle of all of this,
and like it probably would have been fine if it was Ibarra that was getting paid less. Yeah. But the fact that it was your female employee in the middle of all this, I mean, holy shit. The level of stupidity there is unbelievable. And you can't tell me that it's like, well, we couldn't get it figured out quick enough. It's like,
No. You're trying to put out a fire.
That fire, you put that shit out quick.
Yeah.
You threw gasoline all over that shit.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
This feels like they're literally lighting themselves on fire.
Yeah.
It really does. Like
they're doing it to themselves.
Yes. I mean, it's apocalyptic at this point, as I said at the top of this. You know, and I know we've talked so much about it, but there's just been so much news this week. As you mentioned, Jason, Jim Ryan has reportedly criticized Activision. Apparently, this was an internal memo or something that he sent. Apparently someone got a hold of it and he wrote words like disheartened and frankly stunned to read, and that Activision had, quote, not done enough to address a deep-seated culture of discrimination and harassment. Went on to say, we outreached to Activision immediately after the article to express our deep concern and ask how they plan to address the claims made in the article. We do not believe their statements of response properly address the situation. Now, when I first saw this, I remember I messaged you, Jason. I was like, PlayStation sitting here going, shit, we got massive marketing deals with Call of Duty. But I think, you know, I think if they were really trying to save public face, they would have made a public statement. Clearly, this was an internal, you know, memo they sent. So I think there's definitely some seriousness behind it in terms of, you know, genuine, you know, concern here. And Phil Spencer also apparently sent an internal memo and he confirmed that he is evaluating their relationship with Activision Blizzard. I think it would be totally boss if Xbox came in and just said, listen, all Activision Blizzard games are suspended from sale from our Xbox store until you fix this.
Well, I'm not seeing on this.
That'd be a big dick move.
Oh, that would be. Absolutely, it would. Look, I'm not seeing it on you know, the article that we have linked here to our notes, but I swear I read somewhere that, you know, Phil Spencer came over and specifically said that they were going to be evaluating all aspects of their business with Activision. Basically, like, we're going to be looking into the financial of this, and we don't support this at all. And if it makes, you know, sense or not make sense, we are looking at stepping away big time. So
yeah,
I can't see that, but y'all read that somewhere too, right? That he did.
Yeah.
That.
So the official quote I have in front of me here, apparently it was an email sent to Xbox staff that was shown to people at Bloomberg. The quotes picked out here are, quote, disturbed and deeply troubled by the horrific events and actions. Quote, this type of behavior has no place in our industry. And, quote, evaluating all aspects of Xbox's relationship with Activision Blizzard and making ongoing proactive adjustments.
Yep.
Like I said, I think I think it would be super boss if they just came in and said, listen, until you make sweeping changes across your leadership team, Activision Blizzard products are not allowed to be sold on Xbox storefronts.
So you say big dick move. Well, no, look, you say big dick move, but look, dude, it's almost more troubling that they don't. And not necessarily from Xbox's point, but from PlayStation's. Let's just backpedal just a little bit and go,
Cyberpunk?
Think of when Cyberpunk was a little glitchy and they just straight refused to do business and dumped it like it was nothing. But yet this is a legit issue and you're like, well, maybe.
Yeah,
right.
Maybe. Because like, I don't want to the best, you know, the biggest selling game on my console off of the store.
You were thinking exactly what I was. I could tell, like, as soon as I started talking about that, you were like, exactly. Like, Cyberpunk got all of that crazy hate specifically from Sony. Sony was crushing it. I mean, how long was it off of their store? I mean,
it only came back a couple months ago.
I know. And now here we are. This is a major deal. And they're like,
we'll look into it.
We're going to make a Twitter announcement that's really damning. Yeah. Like, come on.
But, I mean, we're going to get into it in a little bit. But, you know, PlayStation just celebrated its 1 year anniversary for PS5. And I've got a lot of tidbits I want to pull from it. But one of the things is that the most played games on that console so far, Fortnite, right? Expected. Mm-hmm. Then Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War.
Oh my God!
Then FIFA 21, FIFA 21, NBA 2K21, and Assassin's Creed Valhalla. So, like, I mean, yeah. And PlayStation are not in a financial situation that Xbox are, where they literally could just be like, "Yeah, nah, fuck it, we don't care."
Yeah.
I mean, it was. You're right. Whereas CD Projekt Red, it was basically one game, right? Yeah. Like. Mm-hmm. It's a studio that's providing for them one game. And well, I guess, you know, Witcher 3, but you know, at this point, Witcher 3 is a bit more played out. It's one game. It's not, okay, it's Activision where it's a franchise that you rely on every single year, multiple different titles.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you also got to expect that there's a little bit of like, you know, okay, if we go and make this kind of big move, like, you know, what if Bobby Kotick has some shit on Jim Ryan?
Oh, sure, sure. You know, absolutely. You know,
well, you see this shit play out in Washington all the time in politics, man.
Politics. Like, you say Washington, even like the Washington football team with the whole like they got into their emails, and if you're a sports guy, John Gruden gets fired over it, and there's the outcry for like. You're telling me 750,000 emails and the only thing bad was John Gruden at ESPN? Yeah. Like, who are you protecting? You know what I mean? Like, know there was more bad stuff, but they're like, well, we can't fire every NFL owner.
Right.
So we can't let that other shit out. So that you're right. Yeah. There could be some other stuff that's like,
Oh my God.
So anyway, now that we've dedicated like a whole another 30 minutes to this topic, I really hope this starts to correct soon, but fuck, it's bad. It's way worse. I mean, we were already saying it was bad, but it's way worse than it ever was.
They are really stepping on their own dick hard. Like, over and over and over, man.
It's rough. Very, very rough. All right. Well, let's move on to number two. The nominee, something way more uplifting, I think, for video games. And I did this on purpose. I wanted to get the bad stuff out of the way. The nominees for this year's Game Awards show on December 9th have been announced, with Arkane's Deathloop nominated for 9 prizes. Insomniac's Ratchet & Clank got 6. Hazelight and Double Fine. Hazelight's It Takes Two and Double Fine Psychonauts tied for 5. Those are the top 3, I guess, 4 games nominated. Xbox leads the major publishers with 20 nominations, which is kind of surprising.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a surprise to me.
Obviously, they are definitely helped out by the fact that Deathloop, even though it's a PlayStation exclusive game right now, is an Xbox Studios game. And then, of course, Psychonauts 2, which is available on both PlayStation and Xbox platforms, is also an Xbox Game Studio game. So if you're on PlayStation, well, I mean, Deathloop, Ratchet and Clank, Psychonauts 2.
All right. This is just real quickly. This wasn't planned, but I just want to real quickly get your take on just a couple little things here. Okay. Game of the year, make a prediction. So you have
Deathloop. So of the nominees?
Two. Yeah, so of the nominees, I'm going to read the nominees.
Okay, sure.
We're all going to take a take. Like, we're going to have a hard take right now, and we'll see, you know, where we land. Deathloop, sure. It Takes Two, Metroid Dread, Psychonauts 2, Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart, Resident Evil Village. Who you got?
So for me, of this list,
yep.
Personally, it's between Psychonauts 2 and RE Village for games I've played this year.
Okay.
But I hands down think Deathloop is going to win.
I think it's Deathloop as well.
I think that as well.
So we are all three are going for Deathloop.
Okay. But I believe Deathloop is going to win.
Okay.
I'll say real quick, and maybe I'm going to get on my own face here for this, but I really think it's because of the politics and nature around the game, the social politics around the game with the lead characters and everything. I know it sounds probably bad for me to say, but that's just where I think the industry is really in love with this game for that reason. And I'm not saying it's a bad game, and I'm not saying they did a bad performance or anything like that. I just don't think it's the best game of the year, but I think that the games industry, media want to make it the best game.
Who do you want to win, Philip?
Well, like I said, for me, it's between Psychonauts 2 and Resident Evil Village. And if you're going to make me pick, I'm going to say Psychonauts 2.
That's here.
Of this list. I think Psychonauts 2 is an absolute superb game.
Yeah.
It Takes Two is another very good story. I don't know. I mean, personally, the game of the year is Forza Horizon 5, and it's not on this fucking list.
Right. I will say, this is not my list, shame. But of this list, I think it's Deathloop. That's what I think will win. So are there any other categories here you just want to stance on and see what other ones would you like? I don't want to do all of them, but I just was curious.
Yeah, me neither. Let's go down a couple of them. Best game direction. We got Deathloop, It Takes Two, Returnal, Psychonauts 2, and Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart.
I don't really feel super strong on this one. Like have like a horse in the race in this one. I'm not sure.
I think this is an interesting category because you do actually have a game like Deathloop that did a really unique take.
Right, and that's the only reason I lean that way, because it seems like it's a really unique take. But so is It Takes Two, though.
And so is Returnal and its approach.
Yeah,
I would think Psychonauts 2 is fairly straightforward action platformer. Same with Ratchet and Clank 2. I don't really think they deserve to be in this conversation.
I'm not super familiar with Returnal. That's why, to me, it's like it's between Deathloop and It Takes Two. But I don't necessarily have a major horse in the race on this.
Yeah, what about you, Mike?
Deathloop is going to sweep.
Whoa.
I think they're gonna win a lot. I think this is the category Deathloop definitely would deserve to win for sure.
Yeah.
I think that they have a really unique idea in their game for sure. Let's see, best ongoing. I only bring this one up because I feel like this is kind of your category, Jason.
I mean, I'm gonna say Apex just because I think Apex had a major onsurge this year. It had its peak of popularity this season. All these games are decently aged at this point. Call of Duty Warzone had a major fall off. I mean, part of that was because Vanguard cheaters, was coming. Man. The cheaters were horrible, and a huge amount of their fan base moved to Apex. So I'm going to go with Apex. And I feel like Fortnite has become actually a bit stagnant. And with their loss from iOS, that's also hurt them. So I think it's Apex. And it's not just because I play it. I just think that this has been their most popular, you know, year. And they've performed well. They've had a lot of streamers move over to them, etc. I don't know.
I think Apex as well here.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems like a good call. What about best narrative? Deathloop, It Takes Two, Life is Strange, Two Colors, Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm really intrigued to see that one there. And Psychonauts 2, best narrative. For me, it's got to be Psychonauts 2. And if this isn't the category that they win in, I'm going to be really disappointed.
I do not know on this one.
Yep, same. the only game I like know a lot about the narrative currently on all these games is It Takes Two. The others, I know of the narrative in Deathloop, but I'm not like deep into it. I don't know any narrative on Life is Strange. Galaxy I haven't played yet, and I haven't played Psychonauts. So I'm not a good take on this.
I like this category though, because it usually gives you an idea of what are the best stories in gaming this year.
Right.
For sure. What about best art direction? Deathloop, Kena, Psychonauts 2, Ratchet and Clank, and The Artful Escape.
I mean, I personally feel like it's Kena, but
yeah, I really like
say Ratchet and Clank.
Oh,
Ratchet and Clank is a pretty looking game.
Yeah,
but I think it's a game that we've seen before. Mm-hmm. Same with Psychonauts 2. I think actually, like, you know, this is another one that I think Deathloop has a reasonable shot at, and I wouldn't hate it winning this at all. I think that its art direction is really unique and interesting. But I mean, for me, definitely Kena. I loved Kena. I think that's its strong suit.
What about best performance?
Yeah, you want to take a shot at some of these names, Mike?
So just
for y'all are all looking at the same thing as. Oh, I guess we have to read it because we're on a podcast.
Well,
aren't
so
we?
Before you get best performance. I saw you smile huge, and I think you're thinking the same thing as me, Phil. We got done with best art direction, and the next category is best score of music. Were you laughing because Cyberpunk is even?
What?
Like, I can't believe it was even. Like, I'm serious. Because of who votes on these things, I can't believe it even got nominated for anything. Anything. I can't believe it.
It does have a good soundtrack.
It does, but I am shocked. It's clearly not going to win. I can't even believe it was freaking nominated.
Yeah.
It's it had absurd. So much hate.
Yeah.
Anyway, we can keep going. I saw you smile. I immediately thought you think it's the same thing I am.
Yeah, for sure. So best performance, we got Erica Mori as Alex Chin in Life is Strange, Giancarlo Esposito as Anton Castillo in Far Cry 6, Jason D. Kelly as Colt Vaughn in Deathloop, Maggie Robertson as Lady Dimitrescu from Resident Evil Village, and Ozioma
Akaga.
Akaga? Sure. I feel so bad. I can't say her name. I'm just... she plays Juliana Blake from Deathloop. So two of the characters.
Loops. Yeah.
Yeah. That's and again, look, listen, guys, this is why I'm saying, like, you got both your characters in
and then there they are for best narrative. Yeah, I get you.
And best narrative and
yeah.
That's just why I think, and I have absolutely no doubt in my mind that Ozioma Akaga will win this, I think.
So, I was going to say, I can tell you who will not win this.
And who's that?
Giancarlo Esposito. He will not win this. Although he's a fun character, it's the same, literally the same person that we've seen him play 17 different times. Yeah. So it's not exactly like an amazing performance. You're just like, okay. Like, I mean... At this point, they didn't even have to like whatever it's called, where they put the 3D cameras and dots on your face. Why can't I think what's that called?
Motion capture.
Even have to motion capture him. They just are like, yeah, okay, we know what he does. Like they, like I'm just telling you, like all he did is went into a studio and recorded his voice, and they're just like, yeah, whatever. Like he won't win.
Yeah,
he's great, but it's just nothing that's it's not yeah.
The only way I could see it is if everyone was like, oh, let's play up to the actual Hollywood actor.
Sure. But I don't think he's going to get it.
Right. The one that I find strange here is Maggie Robertson.
I think she's on there for the meme.
Dude, it has to be. Like,
that's like sure, performance. Like, it was not bad. But, I mean, there's nothing groundbreaking.
Yeah, that's
7-foot-tall lady with massive boobs. That's pretty much it.
I think that's it. Mommy vampire thirst. Yeah. That's what it's all about.
For the meme, I'm gonna laugh if she wins.
Yeah,
because everybody just bought into it.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. So, I think, I'm going back to it, but like I'm telling you right now, if Giancarlo Esposito got this, it'd be like if, damn it, and now I can't think of his name. Vaughn yells in every freaking movie he's ever in.
Oh, Vince Vaughn.
Vince Vaughn. Thank you. I kept wanting to say Chris.
He plays the same character in every. He plays the same character in every damn movie.
It'd be like if he was like up for this award because he was angry and over the top yelling as a character the entire damn time. Like, okay, we get it.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to try to run through a few of these a little bit more quickly because there is a lot. Let's see. Best action, best Back for Blood, Chivalry 2, Deathloop, Far Cry 6, and Returnal. This would be where I would... It could be, but I would really like to see Returnal get its props in best action. I think that would be where they are suited the best in this category. Best action adventure, Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy again, Metroid Dread, Psychonauts 2, Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart, and Resident Evil Village.
I think this is Guardians of the Galaxy.
I think this is where they have a shot, and I would like to see them get their props out of this one. Yep. Here's where it's even fucking worse. Best role-playing game, Cyberpunk 2077. Wow. Are you freaking kidding me?
Hey, but Monster Hunter's on here.
Dude, and it's going up against a whole shitload of Japanese RPGs. Yeah, Monster Hunter Rise, Scarlet Nexus, Shin Megami Tensei 5, and Tales of Arise.
I think the only reason it's on there is because there's no way it's going to win. We just got to, we'll put him here.
I can't believe it was nominated, man. Like, I just can't believe it.
I can't either. Best sports racing, that's probably where Forza Horizon 5 will get its award, and that's just stupid because it should be game of the year. Just saying. I'm a little bit out of shape of that. Best sim strategy is going to be Age of Empires 4, just for the fun of it.
Absolutely it will, because the rest of these, like, really no one cares. Like, it's absolutely going to be Age 4. Freaking drives me nuts.
What about best multiplayer? Best multiplayer is definitely a category I feel like you two...
I personally would hope Valheim gets this.
Valheim.
I really would.
Can you believe... How did New World get into this?
Because they have money, bro. It Takes Two, I could see winning this. But I would actually hope this is Valheim, but I could see this being It Takes Two.
That would be a cool shout since that is like a pure co-op game for sure.
I mean, that's what it was designed for. So I wouldn't be shocked one bit. I think it should be either It Takes Two or Valheim, but I my personal hope is that it's Valheim. Mike, you agree, right?
Yeah.
All right, then the last one, I guess I'll bring up. Maybe you guys are into this, Content Creator of the Year. Do you know any of these people? I'm not familiar with any of these. Dream,
me either.
Fusely, Galls, Ibai, and
the Grefg.
Gen Z thing here. I don't know.
When you say content creator, is this like are these like
YouTube
streamers?
Twitch streamers?
Oh, shit. Yeah, I don't. I, no.
Yeah, Jason's like, there's no Tim the Tap Man.
Yeah,
this
Tim
is
the
bullshit.
Tap Man's not on here. There's no Dr. Disrespect. Get the.
Yeah, for sure.
Streamers I know, or the only YouTubers I know at this point, are Dr. Disrespect, Tim the Tap Man, and Blippi. Okay, like that's all I got.
I love how then you get down to the bottom and there's like best esports game, best esports athlete, best esports team, best esports coach, best esports event. All right, there's
for
your League of Legends.
Vote for best esports coach. Like, what are the like? What do you?
Hey, so listen.
Just your favorite.
I'm not saying it's going to happen.
Contest.
I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I am actively trying to get. I wouldn't say a friend of mine. I'm actively trying to get someone who I have gamed with quite a bit, who is a ex esports coach for the Florida State University esports team.
Okay.
I'm not saying I'm going to get him on the podcast, but I'm actively trying. It'd be just super interesting to be like, so what do you do?
Yeah. Like, how does this work?
Like, what
does
this
do? Like, when you do practice sessions, how do you run drills?
So I'm trying. We'll see if it ever happens or not. But yeah, that would be, then we could find out. Like, I don't know. Who are these guys? I don't know. Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, so my last 2 points here, just as a reminder, last year Last of Us Part 2 won 7 of the 10 prizes it was nominated for. Again, why I think Deathloop is going to win a lot this year.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And then number 2 is just, if you want to go vote, 10% is from public fan voting. So go get your voice heard and vote in the categories on the Game Awards website. Also, Mike, if you knock that microphone up your nose one more time during the show, I am going to lose it. I'm just going to die laughing. That'll be the end of the show.
I don't know what's happening. It's like his arm is like tied to the damn freaking stand. He keeps freaking shoving it into his face.
Like right up his nose, like so far. Oh, man.
I'm going to do it one more time.
I love it. I love it. All right.
Just for you.
All right. Let's move on to number three. And we got sales numbers for October. Far Cry 6 debuted atop the software chart, while Nintendo Switch led hardware sales during a record October for the U.S. games industry. Meanwhile, consumer spending across video game hardware, content, and accessories hit $4.4 billion last month, which was up 16% compared to a year earlier, according to market research firm MPD Group. We finally got a really interesting sales chart because we had a lot of new games. We had Far Cry 6 at number 1, Back 4 Blood at number 2, Metroid Dread at number 3, and then September's number 1 game, Madden NFL 22 at number 4. This one is really shocking to me. Demon Slayer Kimetsu no Yaiba, The Hinokami Chronicles was number 5 best-selling in the United States, even above Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy and Mario Party Superstars. I have no idea what this game is, but you weebs are getting your weeb on with some Demon Slayer. Number 6 was FIFA 22. 7 was Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy. Number 8 was Mario Party Superstars. Number 9, NHL 22. Number 10, NBA 2K22. That is the last of the new games on here. Everything else is pretty much as expected. You got your Mario Kart 8 still in there. You got your Call of Duty still in there. You got your Diablo 3 still in there. So apparently people don't really care about not buying Activision Blizzard games. But hey, so you know, it is what it is.
The one other take I have on this that I don't have the information to back this up, but I'm pretty sure. So if we go back exactly a calendar year to 2020 last year, I think we were still in the major like all-time peak that the gaming industry was seeing due to COVID mm-hmm. and everybody being home. Like the gaming industry had a major peak last year
yeah,
because of all sure. the people being stuck at home. So for them to be up 16% from last year's yeah. record numbers, it's pretty freaking crazy.
There are some pretty newer games, though. Like, people are going to be spending a little bit more, I think, on like the newer games than the older ones that were coming out, because they delayed a lot of the newer games to like this year.
Like I said, I don't have the numbers to back it up. I just know we definitely had a peak year in 2020. I just don't know what October was.
Yeah. So right. Here you go. Consumer spending across video game hardware, content, and accessories reached $3.8 billion in October 2020. 14% higher when compared to a year ago.
So then wow. there's another 2% on top of that.
No, this was another 16%.
Well, I know, but I mean 2% on top of the, because at 14%, they had okay, a 2% sure, yeah. jump of growth in comparison to the, like, anyway, yeah, whatever.
Sure. Yes, I understand, yep. Mr. Salesman. yep.
Had an additional 2% growth.
Yes.
On yeah. their other so, growth.
It's crazy. How much the video game industry is growing. And yeah, I mean, you say that games got delayed, but I mean, really, what your big games were, Far Cry 6, Metroid Dread, Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, like, there really weren't huge games in October. I mean, Far Cry is always a big seller.
Minecraft is still number 16 on this gosh damn list.
yeah. They only dropped 2 places from last month. So there you go. Yeah, those are your top 10 selling games from October. Far Cry 6 won the battle there. Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, I think, it's going to have a bit of a slow burn. I think we could see that game still up there pretty high in November, mm-hmm. Which would be good for them. I think that game is getting a lot of love across the industry right now.
Yeah.
Anything else on this before we move on?
Nope.
Breath of the Wild. When was that released?
With the Switch in 2017, right?
But why is it like on? Why is it on the list now? Like, what it happened?
It just always stays on in and around the top 20.
Oh wow!
I mean, if you have a Switch and you don't have that game, shame on you.
Well, it's like, how are people still buying Grand Theft Auto 5?
True story.
Yeah. Yeah, no, so Legend of the Zelda Breath of the Wild always hovers in and around the 20. You can see it last month, mm-hmm. It was at 25.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, you can see the games that have like really, like for instance, the whole Diablo 2 Resurrected, even though it's mm-hmm. still in the top 20, I went from 5 to 18. That's a pretty big jump or fall, mm-hmm. pretty big fall.
Yes, sure. Absolutely. Animal Crossing New Horizons still up there. Yeah. Smash Bros. Ultimate still up there. But didn't
they have, Animal Crossing had...
they had an update.
A big update that probably had some new people come to
Laurel
it.
Laurel picked it up again. Was playing until like 1 in the morning last night.
Yeah.
I mean, also the Switch OLED launched last month, so maybe that's part of it.
True.
Why some of those games...
Yeah, I get some people who maybe it's their first time buying the Switch.
Right.
And they're getting the... Again, if you don't have the Switch, if you don't have that game, following a Switch, shame on you. So...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so just to bounce something here off you guys. So, because we're going to get into this in just a minute, but since we're talking about Switch games, I just want to throw some numbers at y'all, because I think our audience and us, we need to recognize and realize what it means for Nintendo when we talk about their games. So, you know, when we said the top five best-selling games on PS5 so far over its first year were what? Fortnite or... Call of Duty Black Ops, Cold War, FIFA 21, NBA 2K21, and Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Notice none of those are PlayStation exclusive games, right? None of those are developed by PlayStation Studios. Mm-hmm. Here's your top five best-selling games for Nintendo Switch. Mario Kart 8, Animal Crossing New Horizons, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, Pokemon Sword and Shield. Here's your next five. Super Mario Odyssey, Super Mario Party, Pokemon Let's Go, Splatoon 2, Ring Fit Adventure. Okay. I have to go all the way down to number 14 for Monster Hunter Rise to find the first non-Nintendo developed game.
Yeah.
Nintendo just makes solid games, man. They've been in the business since like we were born. Before then, even.
And the only other game in the top 20 not Nintendo developed is Among Us at number 20. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now let me throw these numbers at you, okay? Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, 38.7 million copies sold. Animal Crossing, 34.8 million copies. Super Smash Bros., 25.7 million. Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, 24.13 million copies. Pokemon Sword and Shield, 22.6 million copies. Okay. The top five, and then number six is Odyssey at 21.9. The top six selling games on Switch all clear the best selling game on PS5 from a PlayStation Studios. PS4 or PS5 from a PlayStation Studios game. So it's just, you kind of have to recognize that, like, you know, when people talk about third party games on Switch and stuff like that and how they need it, blah, no, they don't. No, they don't. Nintendo Switch does their own thing, mm-hmm. and they are very successful at it, and their games sell an absolute shit ton.
Yeah.
Just remember that. All right. Moving. You did it again. Yeah, you did it again. It's right up his nose.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. Number four. So Xbox had their 20th anniversary show on November 15th, celebrating 20 years of the console, the original release of the Xbox, the original Xbox. And they announced a few things that were fun. Halo Infinite Multiplayer launched and was announced to launch on November 15th at this show. They also announced Power On, the story of Xbox. It's a 6-part documentary series about the journey of creating Xbox and its path that it's been on so far. So that will be really interesting. December 13th. They also announced a further 76 games entering backwards compatibility, which is really interesting, as well as 26 of the games already in there getting FPS boost. So that's really, really neat. And they also had finally a trailer of the new Halo show that's coming to Paramount Plus next year. It was a bit of a teaser trailer, not much there, but that was the main things announced at the Xbox show. So fun stuff. I mean, the big thing was Halo Infinite for sure.
Yeah.
But I do really like documentaries, especially about the video game industry. If you haven't seen the Nintendo versus Sega documentary that I think is on Netflix, you should definitely go check that out. I just really enjoy those kinds of documentaries. All right, number five, Xbox says there will be no more backwards compatible games due to legal and tech issues after the latest round of 76 new games that were added to the backwards compatibility library. Additionally, Xbox boss Phil Spencer has called for legal emulation to combat rights issues that block more back compat games. What do you guys think about this? Legal emulation coming from one of the heads of the big game publishers.
Nintendo's not the one saying this.
No, sir. No, they are not.
I mean, not look, a chance. Here's all I'll say about it. Coming from Xbox specifically, I mean, how many Xbox emulators are really out there? I'm not saying there's not any, but like it's not rampant. Like, for instance, all of the rampant bad emulators and the ones that people really honestly want are Nintendo. Right?
Like, and PS1. PS1, I think, is another one.
Yeah. It's so, I mean, I feel like it's a little bit easy for them to say that because they aren't having this problem either. Like, there's just, I mean, I could be totally wrong. I just don't feel like there's really a lot of Xbox emulators out there.
Yeah. I mean, I don't disagree with you, but I'll say this. My opinion is if there's not a way for you to go to that developer or that publisher and pay them money to play their game on a current console, then, you know, that's a problem in terms of game preservation. Mm-hmm. And I don't really have an issue if the only way that you can play some NES game from whenever ago is to pay like $1,000 to some crazy collector on eBay, then yeah, no, go. I mean, Nintendo's not losing money by you emulating that game.
Right. And you know what? I would say this too. They could be ahead of it, like you said, in that this is kind of their, you know, Netflix, in that they could have, I would say, not say ahead of it, whereas Nintendo has their Nintendo Online, where you basically are subscribing to have a service. They're just looking at going a different way where basically it's almost like a royalty. They're licensing it out to these emulators, and the emulators basically do the work and just kind of pay like a royalty on it. And they still get some income on it. They benefit. It's a mutual benefit, you know, beneficing. That, like, I've been a fishing for a long time and not caught anything.
Oh, sad day for you. Yep. No more bass.
Yep.
All right. Anything else to add on that, Mike?
No. Let's move on.
All right. Number six, Microsoft has officially launched Xbox Cloud Gaming for consoles. It's now available for Xbox Series X and S and Xbox One owners with an Xbox Game Pass Ultimate subscription in 25 regions, with Brazil to follow. I thought this was just really interesting because I remember on the show us talking about how, like, we see the future of Game Pass being like, hey, you could do... you could do streaming, cloud streaming on old consoles and still be able to play the new games, but on old consoles.
Yeah.
And then Microsoft actually came out and announced that they were working on that, you know, and we said that that would be really great to see. And now here it finally is. So it's just sort of full circle.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. The only thing that's, I don't know why, it's just a little odd to me, is this seems like something that's really cool that, why didn't it make their anniversary show announcements? It's like it came out like 3 days later. I don't understand why it wasn't just like a part of their show, like another thing they got to like,
Gotcha. I mean, I think it's because they really did focus on items that were anniversary related, right? Like, November 15th is the 20-year anniversary of Halo Combat Evolved launching with the original Xbox, and they got to announce that Halo Infinite's multiplayer beta was starting and launching that day. You know, you have backwards compatibility games added, original and Xbox 360 games added, right? That's a celebration of its history. And then, of course, you have this documentary that's sort of a show about the creation of Xbox and its progress over the last 20 years. So I think if you look at the things they announced, I think it makes sense because they're all related to, you know, celebrating its history. Whereas this is more like its future, right?
Okay. I can see that.
Do you think Xbox is going to slowly be getting away from making consoles and just like put all their cards into this cloud gaming?
I mean, I could see it. The day that all the big console hardware developers are moving away from from dedicated consoles, that I think they'll definitely go. They'll be the first one to try to push everyone that way. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Because it just feels like, it's like if you can play with the best hardware remotely, like, I don't know, it just seems like people are going to want that more just because it's going to be easier to get. I just see it going digital.
Well, I just don't think our infrastructure, our internet infrastructure can handle it.
Yeah, we don't have the technology right now.
Well, so, and it's funny too, like how different companies are moving in different directions. Like we're, you know, I think like you said, Xbox would be the first one who wants to go that way. Mm-hmm. Vice versa, you have Steam who like desperately wants to have a console and be in the console business. They're like working in the reverse way, like,
yeah,
like, hey, now they have the Steam Deck, but even before that, they had the what was their damn console they were coming out with? I can't even remember what it was called now.
It wasn't really a console, though.
I mean, it was like a computer that was specifically meant to run like Valve, right? Like it ran on like a Linux. Yeah, no, I can't remember what it was called now. But anyway, they, you know, it came with a controller and like I can't remember exactly what it was called. Now I'm gonna have to look it up, but.
Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about though.
No, it's not the Steam Deck.
No, that's their new handheld thing.
That's right.
Yeah. Steam Machine.
Which Steam Machine?
Yep, it was the Steam Machine. I mean, they desperately are, you know, anyway, just a comment. It's just funny to me, like, that you've got companies kind of basically going in opposite directions on that. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It is intriguing, but. I think that's just indicative of kind of where they see the future of gaming, right?
Mm-hmm,
Each different company sees it in a different way, which I think is actually the most interesting thing right now. You have Nintendo that are focusing on this handheld hybrid console that can plug into your TV also. You have PlayStation that are focusing, they're the most like traditional console available right now, and then you've got Xbox that are focusing on cloud gaming and Netflix style streaming of games and things like that.
So the one other little thing here, and I don't think any of us are really mobile gamers, like, you know what I mean, like legitimate mobile gamers. Not saying that you don't ever play a game on your phone, but I think in the future that's just going to become more of a legitimate threat, though, like as technology advances. I mean, look at how much like money Apple makes from gaming on, you know, games on their device. Like as these little machines get more advanced, at what point does an iPhone or, you know, an Android phone basically overtake what a Switch is really doing, right? Like,
Right.
I'm just curious.
It's always going to be screen size for me, though, for sure.
I mean, I get you. I'm just saying, like, at some point, like, you know, are they coming out with just a little larger phone or a little, you know, and it's basically just, it is a Switch, but with other things. So, like, why have it just a console when you can have a phone that does it all? I'm just curious.
It will be very interesting to see the future of gaming.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, I wonder if Nintendo, you know, internally views phones as some kind of a potential forward threat or not. You know what I mean? Like,
dude, you put out the Nintendo iPhone. I'm
yeah, game. Right.
All right. Number seven, Sony celebrated its 1 year anniversary of PS5, and Jim Ryan gave a little bit of a sort of interview and put out some comments that I just wanted to kind of highlight a couple of them that I thought were interesting. First of all, obviously, the PS5 launch broke hardware sales records in the United States, which was very interesting and exciting. It was outpacing the PS4 for a while, although that has stopped. They are no longer outpacing PS4 sales because of the supply constraints that have only gotten worse, which is crazy. But some other things that he talked about that I wanted to highlight, we kind of already mentioned the top five best or most played games on the console. He mentioned a number of 4.6 billion hours of gameplay, which is crazy if you think about it being, you know, what is it, like 14 million consoles out there, right? So kind of do the math on how many
billion of hours?
4.6 billion hours. So you can kind of do the math on how many hours everyone is individually averaging. So that's a fun little number to kind of to see there. The other thing he mentioned was that they are currently actively developing 25 games for PS5 at PlayStation Studios. So who knows how long it'll take for all of those to come out, but that's an interesting number as well to see. They're obviously not announcing all of those, but you know, kind of getting an idea that there is a lot going on at their studios. And
by the way, 4.6 billion hours is 191,000 days.
Well, yeah, there you go. But divide that across, you know, 14 million PS4s, and you kind of get the idea of how many hours each individual player is kind of averaging.
13 hours.
Wait, no, that can't be right.
No,
each individual player is only averaged 13 hours.
No. You're right. I had the days hours still stuck up there.
I was like, I played 13 hours just this past weekend. Not quite that much. That's not true. But
how many million?
So 14 million consoles, 14, okay. And you got 4.6 billion hours.
That is 328 hours.
Yeah, that sounds fair.
It's a lot of hours.
So, yeah, that's just under an hour a day people are averaging on their PS5. So mm-hmm. That sounds reasonable.
As the resident PlayStation hater, can I throw some shade and or be the devil's advocate here?
Okay.
So when you've got, and this would go for Xbox too, you know, if they were stating this, when you've got one of these companies who is celebrating their sales on a PS5 console and nobody can get their hands on it, and they've just been allowing the scalpers to just basically, I mean, I've from the very beginning been pissed about, they don't give a shit about the scalpers. They may talk about like, oh, we want to prevent scalpers. They really don't care because it sells for them. They don't care who's buying it. They just care that it's selling. So the moment they can make it and it's available, it sells instantly. Mm-hmm. So all of the scalper sales go into this shit. So this isn't just me hating on PlayStation. This is hating on all of the next generation, the new generation consoles that have come out. And clearly they have hours, they have things that data to back up that they're being used. But I'm just telling you too, to me, it's a little fictitious in that basically everything that they've been able to like make, they sold all of their inventory because scalpers have taken all of it. Like there is no inventory available, and they even have to, at the bottom of this article, you know, put on there that, you know, finally he, you know, thanked the community for its patience around PS5 stock and issues, you know, blah, 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 basically saying that it's been difficult ever since its November 2020 launch. Like, we'll put it this way. Like, I remember waiting in line and buying my Xbox One. And I, you know, I did that. I got it day one. But there were other people who, you know, a couple weeks later or, you know, a few months later, whatever, got their Xbox. Like, all of us right now, I know for a fact, have been into a Best Buy, a Walmart, or whatever, and talked to them about, like, hey, do y'all have the PlayStation 5s in stock? And they're like, yeah, we haven't physically seen one in our store since January. Like, ever.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen that a lot. Like, so again, I'm not trying to dump on PlayStation. I'm just saying, as consoles with numbers like this, right now in today's day and age with the way these scalpers are working, I feel like this is kind of like a, well, good for you that you sold everything you made, but scalpers bought a lot of that shit.
I wonder, like, if they could just still, like, I don't know, like, if Sony just, like, so, like, they would still sell out, like, even if, like, they didn't go through the retail. Like, what if they just, there's an option on their website where they can only, you can only buy one per household or two per household?
Scalpers would get around that shit, dude.
Yeah, but that's how they all do that. I mean, these scalpers, I think,
they create fictitious IPs. Yeah, they get around that.
Right.
So my counterpoint to this always is, you think that scalpers went and bought 10 million PS5s and they're just sitting on them somewhere?
Yeah.
I said,
well, I don't think they bought 10 million. like
I said,
lot.
The devil's advocate in me, and I was sitting there watching your face, and I know you're
I'm saying is that advocate. The value of the PS5 has never and will never be higher than it is right now. So it makes absolutely no fucking sense for a scalper to buy consoles and sit on them. They're getting them back out there. People are paying premium prices, but these consoles are getting into users' hands and they're getting played, because it wouldn't make any sense for a scalper to just sit on a bunch of inventory. They'll lose money if they do it. Ultimately, now you might have some that are trying to play a long game of like, oh, maybe it'll get worse and it'll be harder to find, and I can get $50.
But not 10 million
of these. Yeah, most of these scalpers, when they go and they buy them, they're immediately reselling them for marked up prices.
You're.
I am not buying that shit.
No, I think he's right. I think people are legitimately buying all these. I'm not saying they're sitting in a warehouse somewhere.
I know. I'm just saying. I'm not buying.
It just sucks that there are people are paying $1,000 for them, right?
Right.
So I guess you're right in that. Like, whether somebody bought it for $400 or they bought it for $1,000, they're still buying them. Mm-hmm. Sucks that now they're buying them.
But let's not act like this is a PlayStation issue.
Nintendo. It's not. Yeah,
They lowered their sales expectations, 20% because of supply issues? Mm-hmm. The Steam Deck got postponed. You can't go buy a fucking graphics card for your computer anymore.
You can't
anymore.
Buy pre-built PCs right now, because the only way you could get graphics cards was on pre-builts, and the scalpers found that shit out, and they started buying all the damn pre-builts and then selling just the damn graphics card.
So, it's an issue for everybody.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, my last news item, the unannounced Star Wars game set to be in development at French studio Quantic Dream could be called Eclipse and set during the High Republic era. It has been claimed by VentureBeat's very, very reliable Jeff Grubb. He also goes on to talk about how he thinks that it'll be announced before the end of the year, so I think we might see this at the December 9th Game Awards show. I don't normally like commenting on rumors, but because it's Star Wars and they're talking about High Republic era, I think that's really interesting, especially because some of the High Republic era books that have come out recently, these Jedi have some extensive powers. So I think that could be really cool to see explored in a video game setting, which is why I wanted to bring it up.
I mean, who are we kidding? We definitely talk on rumors. We talk on what studios being bought, this and that. And I'm all for it. Like, I love this rumor here. I hope this rumor is totally true, and I think it actually is.
Yeah, I suspect Jeff Grubb is right. I mean, he's 96 point something percent right. So I suspect you're gonna find out that this is 100% true. I mean, he was the one that talked about multiverses, and we're about to get into that here in a few minutes. So. All right. Anything else to add, Jason?
No, just
before we get on.
I like it. I want it to be tomorrow. I feel like I'll be disappointed.
Why do you want it to be tomorrow so bad?
Because I just want to play damn Star Wars games.
I want the game to be out tomorrow.
Like, surprise, gotcha. Surprise announcement. We've been working on this game in secret, and it's ready now.
I feel you, man. I feel you.
If I ever, it's never going to happen, but if I ever did make a game, that's the way I'd want to release it.
That would be
kind of what
dope,
Apex
man.
Did back in the day.
Yeah, they just dropped it.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. So let's get on out of the show. Upcoming releases, Myth of Empires, November 18th, Battlefield 2042, November 19th. Both of those are out this week, along with Pokemon Brilliant Diamond and Pokemon Shining Pearl. Next week, you've got Final Fantasy XIV Endwalker, and then December 8th, Halo Infinite. Although you can go ahead and get into its multiplayer beta for free this week, right now, as you're listening, whatever. Steam, Xbox Store, you can get it. You can play it. Game announcements. Warner Bros. Has officially announced Multiverses. It's free-to-play crossover fighter that we talked about on the show not that long ago. There's currently no release date, but it will be released on PS5, Xbox Series XS, PS4, Xbox One, and PC with full crossplay support. very interesting that they're going free to play on this one. They showed off a bunch of characters, including Shaggy and Arya Stark, which I was like, who the fuck is Arya Stark? And right. then I realized, oh, Game of Thrones. And I don't give a shit about that show. I was like, when did Iron Man have a daughter? I'm so confused.
Which
he does have a daughter.
Oh, well, there you go. Whoops. But yeah, that's also Marvel, not Warner Bros. So,
yeah.
But yeah, so there you go. The multiverse is real. It's true. It's coming. Have fun with that. Number two, the upcoming reboot of Saints Row has been delayed from February 25th of 2022 to an August 23rd of 2022 release date.
It's a big old freaking...
Yeah, it is. Back. Yeah. I think you don't want to be in February of 2022, though, with all the other games coming out in that month. Elden Ring and Horizon Zero Dawn.
Destiny's new expansion as well.
There you go. Yeah, it's a stacked month. And then number three, Capcom has delayed Pragmata's release from next year to 2023, previously scheduled for release in 22 for PS5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. The adventure game is set in a dystopian near future on Earth's moon. This game actually looks pretty cool. So, you know, take your time, whatever you need. I'm interested to see what this game actually looks like. All right, free shit. Epic Games Store. You can get Guild of Dungeoneering and Puzzle Platformer Never Alone until November 25th. And then starting November 25th, you can get the AntStream Epic Welcome Pack, which apparently that's a streaming service for over 1,000 retro games. So there you go. Go check that out. Hmm. Amazon's free titles still remain the same, with the highlights being Control, Ultimate Edition, Dragon Age Inquisition, and Rise of the Tomb Raider. So go check those out if you're a Prime member. And then Sony's online PlayStation Black Friday store starts tonight at midnight, your local time. Or I guess as you're listening to the show, it's already live. And it will run through November 29th. So go check that out if you want to get some Black Friday early sales for games. And then, you know, that Activision Blizzard game Call of Duty Vanguard. Well, its entire multiplayer offering is already free to play for 4 days, starting November 18th at 10 a.m. Pacific time. So if you want to go check that out, you can do it for free. Okay, and then Game Pass. There's not really any new games really to highlight, but I did see this and I thought it was pretty cool. Right now, you can go ahead and pick up a 3-month free trial of YouTube Premium if you've been wanting to check that out, and then also a 75-day free trial of Crunchyroll Premium. And then finally, just a little PSA. If you are a Destiny fan, Destiny 2 Beyond Light is leaving Game Pass on December 8th. That's curiously 1 day before the Game Awards. Maybe there's something coming up there. Maybe I'm projecting. But yeah, if you're a Destiny fan, please be aware that if you haven't bought Beyond Light or any of its future expansions, you will be losing access to some features of the game once it leaves Game Pass on December 8th. That's all I got, guys. Holy shit. What an episode. Another banger.
It was pretty thick.
So just real quick, it's a small thing, but I'm just curious. Do you think the Destiny 2 Beyond Light leaving Game Pass is a decision made on Xbox's side or a decision made on Bungie's side?
It's Bungie's side.
So
90% sure.
And the reason I say that is, I mean, they're kind of catching some flack over all of this DLC stuff that they're doing, and then now they're also removing other versions where it's free to play. Like, I don't know, I probably say this a little too much, but feels a little money grabby.
You know what's really bad? I was listening to some pretty big Destiny players talk recently on a show, and they were saying that now that they've kind of taken all of the Red War campaign out, and they're about to take, I guess, the
Shadowkeep. It's the second expansion that they came out with.
Yeah, the
Something Keep.
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't Shadow. It wasn't Something Keep.
Now it's gonna drive me crazy.
Yeah, you're the Forsaken. Destiny player, Mike.
Forsaken. That's it.
Yes.
Oh, I can't believe I knew that.
Yeah, so both of those campaigns are about to be vaulted. There's basically no way to come in and catch up with the game if you haven't been with it at this point.
Yeah.
So a very interesting approach from that studio. I think that Bungie is in a little bit of a downturn again with Destiny. They really do seem to play this roller coaster ride with that game. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I guess we'll wait and find out. Jason, Mike, who wants to take us out of the show? Take us home.
I'll do it.
Do it, why Mike.
Not? I felt like I haven't done it in a while.
And I'll feel compelled.
Hey, just, yeah. Just make sure you don't hit yourself in the face with your mic while reading this.
I've closed the notes. Oh, here they are. Okay.
Don't run it up your nose.
Alrighty, let's go. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the 70th episode of the TriCast Gaming Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Remember to like, subscribe, review on your podcasting app of choice. And if you have any questions for the show, DM us on Twitter and Facebook. We'll be back again next Friday with episode number 71. Have a great weekend. Stay hard and game safe.